Hey, who doesn't like to go out to eat? We all love to go out to restaurants. But do we know what really happens behind the kitchen doors? Well, you do if you tune into this show, because we've got some people who know and spent their life behind those kitchen doors, like our host here, Chef Pascal. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Paul. By the way, Paul is a producer, and sometimes if you hear a third voice that you don't see on a video, that's Paul.
I'm the voice of God. I come in from somewhere up above here.
Yes. And, you know, you have a better English than me, so understand.
You have better French than I do, though. I can't speak French at all.
So today, we have a guest that I met should have bring her sooner, but it's not too late because she's always busy, very involved.
And she wanted to hear a few shows, see if you did a good job or not. Yeah. I wasn't sure if she wanted to come
on. I am picky. I am a chef.
So Kathy McKnight, and she's been in Orange County for how many years?
42.
Oh, 42. My goodness.
Yes.
Right. Well, and she's only 45. It's amazing.
I know. It's
amazing. But she's not just a chef. She's our nickname is the Chef Connector, and she connects chef with also charity. She creates a lot of special events. She helped some program with Shock, and we were going to talk about one.
Shock, the big children's hospital, is that what you said?
Okay. Yes, Max Love is with Shock.
Yeah. I have to interpret for Chef once in a while.
Shocking. But, okay, all right, before you came to Orange County, you were in Northern California. I won't ask you where, but you already remember in the countryside?
I was raised in a little town called Grass Valley. Yeah. We owned a big quarter horse ranch.
Oh, wow.
And so we raised quarter horses and Arabian ranches.
Oh.
But we were surrounded by orchards and farmers and producers of meat, small farms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was raised with a very large, we had a half acre garden. Yeah. And I used to sit in front of Julia Childs on PBS when I was like 7 years old and copy her recipes. And then I'd say to my mom and dad, I'm going to the garden to get stuff and I'm making dinner.
So you were little Julie.
Yeah, I was a little Julia, but they used to make me turn the sound off because they didn't like her voice. So I would
that
have
it. Strange kind of voice that she had.
Exactly. And my dad couldn't stand it. So I would turn it really low and get right in front of the TV and copy her recipes. And
that, actually, for you, for who you are now, that was a good start. So we can say thank you to Julia.
Oh, she was my very first mentor.
Yeah, yeah.
My grandfather, my Italian grandfather.
Oh.
Because I would cook with him on Sundays after Mass in the kitchen.
Okay.
And he taught me how to bake bread and make sauce and marinate garlic and cheese and all
I have to say, even though I'm a French chef, I love good Italian cuisine.
And pastas. Yeah. He taught me how to make my first pastas.
Yeah. And Italian, I'm very picky, like you are, for what they use. They want to have the best tomato, the freshest herb, the best olive oil.
His olive oil was green. So green. You don't see olive oil like that unless you're in Italy.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Wonderful. So you came here, already have a beautiful connection with natural, fresh products.
Slow food movement in Northern California and further galvanized.
Define what that is for those who don't know.
It's slow food originates from Italy.
Yes.
But is it still, there's still a program of slow food?
There is still a slow food program. So basically, we're talking about food that originates in the soil that is made as naturally as possible without too much interference.
Yeah.
So we're sautéing and simmering and doing all the things. Canning is actually slow food because we're just preserving our natural tomato.
Because can, right on the season. Can tomatoes in winter.
No, it's all seasonal.
But doesn't it have something to do with how you actually cook, too? The idea of things slower and simmering and stewing and things and not just putting it in a microwave and having it come out.
That's what people think. Yeah.
That's what I always thought.
But still, it's part of the philosophy that you enjoy local freshness. And we're talking about that, the slow food that you are part of. And because you work at Alice Waters' restaurant.
I bussed tables and swept floors at Chez Panisse, which was my first introduction at 17 years old to Alice Waters.
Wow.
And that further I was at UC Davis as a pre-law student. I wanted to be a criminal attorney. And when I worked at Chez Panisse that summer, I went back and said, I think I want to be a chef.
Wow.
And I did get accepted at 5 different law schools and decided to take a year off. We were newlyweds. And my husband and I met in college at Davis. And I said, I just want to take a year off and cook.
Good.
And I had been taking some culinary classes at California Culinary Academy in San Francisco. And I started cooking, and I never looked back, and I never went to law school. And my dad didn't talk to me for almost 3 years, which was okay. I still continued to cook.
Well, because you don't make a living right away.
And I started small. I was basically cooking for friends. I started a company called What a Dish, which is still in Orange County. It's a small cafe. But it didn't actually become What a Dish till 1995 when I did a DBA and said, this is What a Dish.
Was it in Irvine?
No, it's in the harbor in Dana Point.
Oh, okay.
It's in the harbor in Dana Point. But I always embrace the principles of slow food and seasonal and small farm and small producers. And
so am I wrong? Then slow food is not about how long it takes to make the food. It's just...
It can be.
But it can be also because you eat slow.
Opposite of fast food.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always some events in Italy that, you know, take half a day to have a meal.
Oh my goodness.
Everything is cooked fresh, almost in front of you.
And there are dishes like that I've never made. I can't cook at all, but I've never even seen anybody make them that take hours and hours to prepare. Lots of dishes, traditional dishes in France and Italy and stuff. Even in Mexico or whatever, they cook the pig overnight or something. I never saw that. We went in, the food was done rather quickly, and we ate rather quickly.
But it's really the key is to have mostly organic ingredients, local farm, and some fishing, but always in responsible fishing. And
can I go down one rabbit hole, since because you knew Alice Waters too, didn't you, Chef?
Yeah, actually, we got a certificate, an award, Ecology Center. You want to talk about that?
So we have a group of chefs at the Ecology Center. It was called the Community Accord, and it's 8 chefs in Orange County that have agreed to source within a 250-mile radius of the farm in San Juan Capistrano. And Alice came down and did the Green Feast with us, and actually half of the funds were donated to her Edible Schoolyard project. We raised $500,000 that night.
So I got to take a chance, because I've always heard I'm a food lover. I love to go out to restaurants. I know diddly about how to make food or grow food or anything else, but I appreciate good food. And you talk about that California cuisine, that whole movement of changing from classical French to whatever we do now, whatever California is, fresher ingredients, local ingredients. Not that French wasn't, but that wasn't our perception of French food. It was heavy sauces and creams and butters and other things and stuff. So, what was Alice? Why did she become the face of this changing cuisine? What did she do? What was so special about what she did that got so many people talking about this and changed direction?
I think, Chef, you might, being Basque and from France, I think Alice took the very best of France and brought it to California. And she's obviously a Francophile. She loves France.
No, she loves France. She loves French chef. And as much as Julia Child. And then she did spend time in the Pyrenees.
But something about what she did, she was getting back to basics and simpler food. And peasant food, really. Yeah. I guess that's what it was, right?
It's the French and the Italians, too. The peasants eat better than, I think, half the people because they eat fresh from the land.
If I can answer your question a little bit, and I'm sure Katie may agree with me, there are opportunity to do great cuisine in California is that we don't use that much butter and cream. Mm-hmm. We have great olive oil, we have great produce, and they don't need all these dairies. And so it does change the cuisine, and this is why...
Because I would use the French being Béarnaise sauce and all these other thousands
of
sauces.
Yeah, but no, not in California cuisine. And actually, I would say California cuisine is healthier, and we're going to talk about healthy cuisine later.
That's
too.
That's my point. But you got to meet her. I don't know if she's still with us. Is she still
She's still very active, and especially with the food movement and trying to change the way people eat, and especially with children in the schools. The Edible Schoolyard Project is just a shining light for how we should be feeding our children in the schools. And I'm working with Conscious Kitchen, which is another...
What are you doing for that? To be working for years when my kids were at school, I was appalled. I was feeling bad that they give them fried food, they eat with their fingers, and then.
Is there any other way to eat French fries with your fingers? Yeah, come on, this is America.
No, but everything was fried. And
yeah, yeah.
They don't even ask them to wash their hands before right. they eat, and all. The condition of dining at school is terrible.
It's atrocious.
Yeah.
It's atrocious,
how
but
can
it
we
is changing.
That?
It is changing. The more, and it's all through education, Chef. And that's what you do. You educate with what you do with mm-hmm. all the children you're teaching and the people that I educate. I think we've transitioned from the kitchen being the great educator to a classroom now in yeah. a lot of ways. Yeah. And of course, we have to do things ourselves the way they should be done.
My kids used to take their lunch box mm-hmm. to school. And they open their lunch box, and the kids say, "What are you eating? I look weird."
I know, right? I
so
know.
That's
where's the bag of Fritos yeah. and the peanut butter
the,
jelly?
The string cheese.
You'll see now, like the Huntington Beach School District, Conscious Kitchen has been working with them, and that's an offshoot of the Edible Schoolyard Project. They've got fresh strawberries seasonally are adding into the children's lunches. They're having apples from our growers here in California. They're getting fruit and vegetables onto the plates of the kids in the school districts. And I think Capo School District is starting to do that. They're employing people that want to see a change. So they want to do things differently, which mindset is huge in the kitchen. We both know that. Changing people's minds.
Okay. So now we're getting to my next question. You move that to another level, that you involve in changing food, also changing people's diet who have medical trouble. And can you talk a little bit about this?
We've
yes.
moved on to what, the Max Love Project, now we're going to talk about here?
Well, yeah,
some of that
part of the, okay. part of it is, but also there's more to that.
There's so much to it because culinary medicine, obviously whatever you put on your plate, that's what your body becomes. So if you're eating a fast food diet and flaming hot Cheetos and whatever, you're driving through everywhere, you're not feeding your body optimal fuel. Mm-hmm. One of the things I also do is I have a lot of high level athletes that I feed and get ready for like the NFL draft or things like that. And I tell them all the time, you're a Ferrari. You're not a broken down old Saab.
But they need good fuel.
So you need good fuel. And one of the things we introduce into their diets is bone broth.
Bone broth.
Okay. And especially chicken bone broth because my chickens are sourced from Primal Pastures, which is the only real pasture-raised chicken in the United States on a large scale. And they have none of the hormones or the antibiotics, and they
Where
eat outside all day.
What?
Sprouts carries them,
okay.
but the best is direct ship. They direct ship right to your door, which is fabulous.
We had somebody years ago on one of our shows talk about this fad called paleo diets. Eat like a caveman.
Yes.
Paleolithic.
Yes.
And they were so big on bone broth. Why is bone broth such a big deal? My great grandmother used to make bone broth, and we would kind of hold our nose.
That's why sometimes you start to have a little coughing.
I have one today, yeah.
I have bone broth.
Okay.
The collagen is what's huge because it mends ligaments in it. It cushions ligaments, mm-hmm. and there's so many amino acids we get in the bone broth that we don't get through regular food. Ours is infused with fresh ginger, turmeric, lemongrass, garlic. So it's we call it golden elixir. Because it's this gorgeous, it looks like Jell-O if it's done right. That's the collagen. If you have liquid bone broth that you're buying, it's not real bone broth. Mm-hmm. Real bone broth should look like Jell-O, and then you heat it up and it becomes liquefied. But our children going through chemotherapy with the Max Love Project, what happens in chemo is it destroys your gut. And the bone broth, as you well know, Chef, you've gone through this, the bone broth goes in and heals the gut. And it heals all the little tears in the gut that are caused by the chemotherapy. So all of a sudden, the children start to get their appetite back. And
so
they start eating again.
Is it that it helps you, I don't know, this is a harsh word to say because nobody thinks you can actually recover necessarily from cancer, but Chef has and others. So what does it do? Does it help you get through the chemo or does it help you actually get past the cancer?
First, you have to have that kind of diet before you get that news.
Yeah,
and I mean, you need to have an healthy living. So if ever suddenly somebody, the doctor or oncologist say you have cancer, if you're already healthy inside your body, I will be stronger
to fight.
Candidate to fight and to respond to the chemo. That's the key.
But you were saying part of it is, like with Max Love Project, we'll talk about that in more detail in a second, is people, this is for children with that have been diagnosed with cancer. How do you get through the chemo first? Because the chemo can kill you, too. The chemo can... It's like taking a sledgehammer to get out a sliver, somebody explained to me. You're taking such a hard hit to your body here.
If they don't like modern medicine, they...
But it is, it has a severe impact on your body, so you need to be as strong as you can be. Right.
Yeah, and our children, I think one of the biggest issues they have is getting an appetite back, and that's why there's a lot of people introducing medical marijuana for children now.
Really?
Yes,
oh, wow.
Because in small doses, it helps with the nausea. Yeah. And they stop vomiting, which also destroys the gut lining.
Yeah.
So you add things like that with the bone broth and with a healthy diet, and all of a sudden there's some hope. And we're giving parents hope. This is what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And we're giving children hope when we're saying, as part of your protocol, we're going to introduce a healthy diet and feed your cells and feed your body.
Have you noticed some changes for some of the kids that have been not treated by you, but you influenced to change their life?
Yes.
Can you feel that they got stronger?
They say they are stronger. Good. The children are the best advocates for what we're doing because they are thriving. And the whole thing with Max Love Project is we want you to thrive. We call it thrivership.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're going to heal. Yeah. But like Max of Max Love, he was diagnosed when he was 3. He's now 18. His mother started this. She was the one that got us all going, Audra.
I'm just going to interject because I'd never heard of this until a couple months ago. And now two shows, two different people come in and talk about the same thing. Must be doing some amazing thing.
Yeah, Max, can talk about...
Tell us real quickly the Max Love story here.
Yes.
What do you do? How does it get started?
So
and how do you do it?
I met Audra when I was starting a meal delivery company that was completely... culinary medicine based, and it was the only Whole 30 approved meal delivery company in the United States at the time.
What does that mean, Whole 30?
The Whole 30 is basically an elimination diet where you ask people to take out sugar and certain things in their diet, like dairy, that can be inflammatory in order to heal. So the Whole 30 is very popular now. But we were at the 4th Street Market in an incubator kitchen. And we were very fortunate to be next to Michael Pugliese at Electric City Butcher, who was a whole animal butcher. And he introduced me to Pasture Bird, which is where we got our bones. And Audra was walking through the kitchen one day, and she is this statuesque, gorgeous, platinum blonde, about 6 feet tall. And she went walking through, and I thought, who is that lady? She's just shining, right? And so Michael introduced me, and she told me about Max Love, and I said, whatever you're doing, I want to do it. I'm on.
And her theory was, when they described the project before, her child was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Yes.
Not going to live.
Yes.
She said, what could I do?
Yes.
Other than pray. I felt food was the only thing I could help heal.
Audra was a chef, and she thought, we're going to start at home. It all starts at home, right? Don't you think, Chef?
Sure.
Everything starts at home on the dinner plate, the way we educate our children and how we eat. So Audra started feeding Max, and they started seeing results, and other families came to her, and the nurses at Chalk told other people about what Max was going through and what Audra was doing.
The Children's Hospital of Orange County.
Yes, right, Children's Hospital, and Max Love Project was born. And Audra, this organization has helped so many families. We also have a base now in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And we have people that are from other countries. We have a great online platform. Our cookbook, which you can see here, was 3 years in the making. All the recipes in it are 5 or 6 ingredients. They are geared for the children to feed themselves because that's so important.
That is great because that's one of the problems. Children don't have access to their family, even home cook. And, so this, I'm going to go through that book.
That's your copy.
Oh, thank you.
That's your copy.
And
so
do
you
they
can
believe,
go
I don't know if there's any proof of this, that it makes the children not just stronger to go through chemotherapy and the treatment that can be very difficult to deal with, all the things you're talking about, destroys the gut lining, lose your appetite, et cetera, et cetera, but that it can somehow help the body heal itself and maybe even... cure cancer or prolong your life?
Eating well is good for your functioning, But eating and you, when you enjoy your meal, you feel already better. Isn't that true?
Mentally.
So it's body on mind. Curing cancer is body on mind.
So I know we've danced around this, but you've dealt with cancer yourself, Chef.
Yeah.
Severe bouts twice. Yeah. And you're still here, thank goodness.
Sorry.
Do you credit food?
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of that? I know you always credit UCI and the great work they did for you and wonderful and the treatments and chemo. You went through all that. But food, was that an important part of your recovery?
Well, even when I was treated at UCI in an inpatient, I always make sure I connect with the chef. Make sure I get the right food.
I'll meet the doctor, but first let's meet the chef here.
I don't want the community fried
not the hospital food
on the pizza. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
Part of our hospital system's one of the great absolute dichotomies is what they feed the patients in the hospitals.
Isn't that the truth? We had somebody else come to talk about that. You're trying to heal people, and you're saying eat healthier, and yet they're giving you very bland institutional food.
Oh, and institutional is the right word, because to eat that, I'd have to be institutionalized.
Because most of the hospital outsource and
really
a production company.
And so they're going based on price and based
sometimes
on
sometimes they have no control. They say, okay, we can give you a meal for $1.50, but this is what you
get. We had somebody else come in. I'll give you another interesting one, another rabbit hole. It was an entrepreneur show, and this guy was trying to reinvent, not candy machines, what would you call it, snack machines?
Vending machines.
Yeah. And he said, why? You go into a hospital, you're sitting around for hours, going through under severe stress, you're not eating well, you're there with a loved one, taking care of somebody. Why are they just offering you the crappiest stuff we've got in America here? Why not put better snacks in there that will help you through this struggle, help energize you, help you hang on?
Well, I have to tell you, with my experience, this one is still under construction, but the UCI on Chapman in Orange, if you go to the cafe, you have some choice, some good choice.
Okay.
There's some bad choice. But you know, it's like everything else. You have to make a choice.
Absolutely.
What you eat, what you put in your plate.
But at least you have to have a choice. Sometimes what we're saying is you go to some of these institutions.
Yeah, exactly.
A school, like a church, I mean a hospital, a vending machine.
Yeah.
The choices are limited.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't even.
That is changing, though.
Yeah.
That is changing.
If you want a nice bowl of salad with some beans and chickpeas and things like that, they can do that for you.
Yeah. There, it is changing, and it's really interesting. There's a brand new restaurant in L.A. that I just love. I've started following. It's called Tallow, and they're one of the only non-seed oil, and they use only beef tallow to cook everything in. But
all right, you got to explain that to me. I don't even know what tallow. Tallow is fat or something?
So beef tallow is the fat. It is the closest. It mimics human fat the best, so we break it down better than any other fat that we ingest. But what's interesting about it...
Because I'll stop your saying, because we're all taught to think fat's bad. No
fats. You have to feed your brain good fats in order to heal from cancer.
Yeah. Some fats actually help you to take all the good from the greens. Mm. If you eat a lettuce with no oil, it's zero.
Right.
They don't give you anything.
Really? Okay.
Because all these good components of the greens is so soluble. So that they dissolve... Only there's a presence of fat.
They bind to the fat, all the good amino acids and the vitamins. But what's interesting about it is people told them, you can't do it. You cannot do it. You will never be viable as a restaurant. And Chef, you and I both know how difficult it is to run a restaurant, the state of California, let alone anywhere. And they're thriving. They're doing so great. They're looking at opening another restaurant because people are lining up outside the door to eat
and
healthy.
And did they predict their demise because this was something different, or it was more expensive or hard to get? Or?
Both. Right. More expensive, different, nothing like it.
I also give you hope.
Yeah, it's just a different model than how most restaurants are run. Chef, the bottom line, especially corporate restaurants, it's all about food costs, labor costs. And then there's that whole group of us that don't care about food and labor costs because we want to put the best thing on the plate, and maybe we don't make money, but we're feeding people the way we think will cause them to enjoy life more.
So talking about that, you still go to the business side of you. You still run a catering business?
I do not. I have a company called Kitchen 415.
Okay.
415.
Oh, yeah, 415.
And just trying to wheedle out of you what that means. I said, save it for the show. Don't tell them beforehand.
Okay.
We thought it was a area code.
It's 4 feet by 14 feet.
Yeah.
So in the state of California, my husband's a retired 30-year Newport Beach police officer. Okay. And in the state of California, the California State Penal Code 415 is a disturbance of the peace. So my job is to disturb the food system and to turn it upside down and to wreak havoc and make noise.
That's good trouble.
Yes, it's good trouble.
Can
it's
you get arrested
trouble.
For that, though, in California?
Possibly. Right. You could.
Yeah.
Some of the parties I throw. But I will tell you, Kitchen 415 is just, it's been a revelation to me how people want to change. They're tired of doing things the same way, especially my people that come to me that have, I work with a lot of people that have maybe allergies or intolerances.
Oh, everybody today. My wife, everybody I know has some food allergy.
There's something going on and they're like, how do I feel better? And I'm like, okay, we're going to start with food. What are you eating? And they're like, I only drink 8 cups of coffee in the morning and then I don't eat until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then when I do, it's a great big sandwich or what?
Quarter pounder with cheese.
Or they're driving through and they're eating quickly.
Yes,
they're eating
always.
So quickly and they're ingesting everything. We're ingesting everything quickly because of social media and how media is done these days and everybody's in a hurry. And then I think people got super isolated during COVID and they started eating maybe differently because a lot of people gained weight during COVID because they were eating at home and they weren't getting out and they weren't getting the exercise. So Kitchen 415 is about changing the way we perceive food, how we ingest food, and changing the food system.
All right, so break those down for us. How do we perceive food? And I'll start the conversation by telling Chef, he never believes me. He can't imagine anybody lived like this.
What?
I grew up in suburban Midwest. We perceived food as an annoyance, just something you had to stop and do once in a while. It wasn't for fun. It wasn't for flavor. It wasn't about a family. It wasn't about helping mom cook. It was the birth of convenience cooking, microwaves, frozen food, canned food, and you just consumed it quickly because it didn't taste that good.
But that started in the 50s.
The 50s.
That's 60s, what happened. All of a sudden, they commercialized food. Right. Went out of the garden, into cans, into boxes, into frozen food, and it was because of the war, and they needed people to eat differently, and then it never got better. Now it's getting better.
But we're talking about the U.S.
The United States.
Clearly, yeah.
Totally
in
different
Europe,
than Europe.
Very different.
Very different.
Because in Europe, actually, it went the other way. People start to raise their own chicken, have their own vegetable garden, things like that. So it flipped.
Right.
Here, because that's probably the entrepreneurial side of it, just to cover.
I remember when the first supermarkets came. I think in Michigan it was Kroger's, I think, or whatever. But these places appeared, and I didn't know where food came from. I didn't know what it looked like in the wild. I only knew what it looked like in the can.
Yeah.
Or in the package.
Yeah.
And we're lucky in California, I think, that there's a greater awareness of where your food comes from, and it's getting better that way. And, of course, one of my big hashtags on my Instagram is know where your food comes from, know your rancher, know your farmer, know where your food comes
from. I'll grow your own.
And, yes, and even if it does come from the supermarket, there's a lot of choices in supermarkets
now
that you can make, and you can choose organic if you can. Now, people say organic's so expensive. So is healthcare.
Not that much more, yeah, exactly.
Do you want to spend money on healthcare? Or do you want to spend money on food?
Let's see, one example. If you buy one red bell pepper, compare the organic bell pepper and a regular bell pepper. You have twice the amount of meat and juice in the organic than the other one. And so that means there's something good for you.
And even buying one chicken. You can get three meals out of a chicken because you get your chicken, you get two meals out of that, and then you have the bones for broth and soup.
That's what I do. Sometimes,
even sometimes,
if I'm lazy, I like to go to a spot, I buy a rotisserie chicken, pre-cook, it's very good, and they have a very responsible raise, possibly a raised chicken.
And where do you go to get this? Where?
Spot.
Where? Oh, Sprouts. Okay, yeah. Sprouts.
They carry Pasture Bird. They're one of the few stores,
Sprouts,
that and Jimbo's.
And so it's an easy meal for me. I don't have to cook that night. But like you say,
chef can be lazy sometimes. I didn't know that.
Okay. No, we just need a break.
Okay.
The first night, my wife and I, we eat the dark meat, leg and thigh. The next day, we will do something, sandwich or something like that, or with some pasta, we saute the white bread, red meat, the breast. But I make sure I save all the bones.
That's right.
The carcasses, the leg bone, everything, because the next step is to make a chicken
broth.
So
let me see if I can tie some.
What about the schmaltz?
The schmaltz. Yeah. What's the schmaltz?
That's the chicken fat, which is gold. It's absolute good. Gold.
I thought schmaltz was just a Yiddish word for too much corniness.
It is, that too. But it is the chicken fat.
Let me see if I can tie some of this together here. So we've talked about slow food. This is slow food, not just consuming it and throwing it away quickly here, and then cooking the broth, which takes a while. You can tell you don't do this in 5 minutes.
It's easy.
Okay.
It's a mix of vegetables, celery, carrot, parsley, sometimes if you have a couple of mushroom stems.
But you've got to let it sit and simmer for hours on the stove, right?
No, it's not for chicken. Chicken, I would say an hour and a half, fine. You have a good...
I always thought it took overnight or something.
It does if you're making the bone broth just from the bones.
Yes.
Pasture Bird sends me 40 pounds of bones.
Yeah.
And I roast them first. Mm-hmm. And then I turn that into bone broth.
And that would take overnight.
Yeah. And that takes 14 hours.
Okay. So we're slow movement. Then we're talking about knowing where food comes from. I got totally disassociated from where it came from. I had no clue even what it looked like in the wild. What does a squash look like if it's not in the store in a can? I don't even know. Or didn't know. So isn't that part of what Alice Waters brought to the whole picture to bring it back to that? The sourcing it, knowing again. What chef takes for granted today, I don't think restaurants always did or got away from in the 60s and 70s and whatnot.
Yeah, I think she even went further than that. But
buying it locally, sourcing it locally, knowing.
Yeah, she looked for that little curly vegetable that.
Endive?
No.
Which one?
Green.
Escarole?
No.
Don't tell me.
She used to put that on pizza.
The arugula?
Fiddlehead.
Oh, yes.
Fiddle? Yeah.
Go ahead.
And where do you eat?
Where
that?
Do you find that?
I know. Oh, and
so finding that local source.
Special green. She brought.
She was real big, as I understood, in finding local sources. Now, every chef has heirloom tomatoes that are only grown nearby, not just the canned stuff.
In
or
the summer.
The special stuff that's imported that grown in a big, giant corporate farm, and it all has no taste to it because it's grown in a hothouse.
One of the places that Chef Pascal and I both are deeply associated with, we talked about the Chef's Accord, is the Ecology Center
that's
in San Juan
Capistrano. Exactly. Yes. Talk about that.
So, when I started there 15 years ago, we had four planter boxes. And Evan Marks, who's the founder of the Ecology Center, of course, had this great vision for an organic farm, but not just an organic farm, but a community where people were educated and where people could celebrate the farm and they could celebrate the produce. Now there's 28 acres.
Wow.
And a beautiful farm stand.
And this is in San Juan Capistrano?
It's in San Juan Capistrano.
I don't even know where it is.
So you go through the city and you go west. And then after the...
Towards the ocean, right?
After the track.
Yeah.
And then there's two blocks down on the left.
I should know where that is.
It's at Alipaz and Del Avion.
Yeah. Okay.
And their strawberries in the summer, oh my gosh. You can go out in the field and just pick them warm, and you've never tasted anything like it.
And they have an open produce and fruit market there. You can buy fresh pick.
I can remember the first time when I came to California and started to eat better and go to find restaurants and go out with, I was in the entertainment business, celebrities and taking me to fancy places. I didn't know food could taste like that. And somebody said, taste the strawberry. I'm like, a strawberry tastes like a strawberry. Every strawberry is the same. They're all in a can, or they all, maybe you get them fresh, but they're all pretty kind of bland.
The thing is, you don't,
wow.
You don't just have to taste it. You can smell
it. You can
them.
Smell it, yes. Or anything,
it's
a tomato
like
or
a
something.
Sweet truffle.
Oh my God.
So, on a strawberry, the little tip.
Okay.
The top of the strawberry is called the shoulder. And a lot of times, the shoulder is green, chef.
Yeah.
And so, people go and buy strawberries, and the shoulders are green instead of red all the way to the stem.
Yeah, from one end to the other.
And so, from the little beautiful little end of the heart to the top of the heart of a strawberry, if it's red all the way with no green shoulders, you are in for a treat.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the Ecology Center is like that. You can go, you pick, or you go by the pounds. You can bring your children and they wander through the fields and they pick. But there's also so many more vegetables there. And Community Table, which is what Chef and I have been a part of, and the Green Feast, which is about bringing the community together and putting them around the table and having conversations about where our food comes from and how to feed ourselves and our families and our friends.
And is that food healthier for you?
Yes.
Because it doesn't have pesticides, et cetera, et cetera. Or is it also, is it just that it really does taste much stronger taste, much bigger, bolder flavors?
I love that.
And instead of farm to table, let's say soil to supper, because it's about the soil.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we go in and we see what is in our soil. All the farms that we use in California, some of them are organic, some aren't. You could get a non-organic farm producing next to an organic farm, and what leaches into the organic farm soil ruins that and makes it non-organic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So organic farms are very conscious about what the people next to them are doing. It becomes a community and it spreads, right?
Yeah.
That,
and you can make your own compost.
You can make your own compost, and that's everything they're doing at the Ecology Center and the classes down there for
but
children.
But you need like horse poop and stuff to
vegetable scraps.
Vegetable scraps?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All the vegetable scraps.
I'll give you another interesting takeaway. Maybe this is off the subject, but I didn't know. Oh, we bought a house years ago, still live in it, and my grass wouldn't grow. Put sod on it, died. Put sod on it, died. I went to the water district. They said when they built these subdivisions, they scraped all the topsoil off. You're putting it on the solid clay or whatever was under that.
On sand.
Sand or something. On rock. It'll never grow. So you have to, what would you say, have to put this fertilizer? I got to put something into
amendments.
It. Amendments. Yeah, to break the soil down and to turn it into something you can grow on. Yeah.
Compost, worms.
And you put
worms and things.
Yeah.
Compost tea.
Yeah.
So we're trying to grow food, or maybe they're not growing food in my neighborhood, but they're trying to grow grass, trying to grow something in without any topsoil.
Even your grind coffee beans are good for compost.
Really? Okay.
So funny, my husband, we live out in Cota de Casa, and of course a lot of the people have lawns, but my husband, who has a great green thumb, our whole front yard is California natives. And what's really cool about it is the butterflies and the bees and the birds.
Yeah,
and
you can tell when you do something right.
Oh.
You have the birds, all the butterflies, and all the
lizards.
And then, of course, that brings the owls and the crows. But
right.
I have a front courtyard, and he put in a potager for me. So I have 37 herbs in my front courtyard that are all around a fountain. And in the morning, the birds.
Can you write down your address?
Yes, I can.
We're coming to your house.
It's the best because I just go outside and pick lemon.
So now you gave me 10 different reasons. Not just that I'm going to eat better, and it's going to taste better, and it's going to be healthier for me because I'm growing it or I'm sourcing it locally, but it's going to feed the birds and the worms and the bugs and the lizards and all the other
ecosystem.
Stuff.
Ecosystem. You can create your
own
ecosystem.
And now I'm happy and I'm smiling more and everybody's
there's
cheering.
There's joy. Yeah. There's joy.
And unfortunately, it's very hard here to give a home to the bees.
They say bees are collapsing everywhere. Bee hives are collapsing all over the country.
Yeah,
neighbors complain.
Wipe them out.
If you have a beehive in your backyard.
They see a bee in my neighborhood, people freak.
No, yeah,
yeah, there's a bee in the backyard.
Well, they can't eat without bees.
Yeah.
So you don't have bees, you don't eat. So there, protect the bees, okay?
But am I wrong? Every time somebody with little kids, they see a bee and immediately shoo it away, kill it, get rid of it.
I think that's changing a little bit. Yeah. I think there's education on that. And we actually, there's a lot of bees down at the farm at the Ecology Center. And I had a group of kids there a couple weeks ago, and there was bees everywhere. And the kids were like, bees. And I said, just let them land quietly.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we took a deep breath, and a couple bees landed on the kids and then flew away. And they were like,
don't scare them, because they're scared.
Then they'll sting you.
Then they'll come back.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the bee doesn't want to sting you. It dies.
They rally everybody.
I know. The bee wants a flower. That's all it wants. It wants the pollen, and if you ever see a bee that's loaded with pollen try to fly off of something, and they're like
so this. I have to say also, the Ecology Center is open for lecture.
Mm-hmm. We got to get you to lean into the mic.
You can visit the Ecology Center and learn. Even when I'm at South Bay College, sometimes we do a tour, and because it's very important that cooks and chefs knows what's going on, because that's probably the only place. But what about Tanaka Farm?
Tanaka's wonderful. We work with Tanaka hand-in-hand at Max Love Project. They have been so generous with their property and with letting us hold our fundraisers there. And we actually do a walk for cancer in September for our kids there. Oh, and about 300 or 400 families come. But Glenn Tanaka's amazing.
20 chef.
Oh, so the dinner we did, the Chef's Friendship Dinner last year, we actually had our whole Chef's Accord. You couldn't quite make it. I think you were still possibly recovering.
Yeah.
But we had 10 chefs there, and what a dinner. Oh my gosh, what a dinner. We fed 200 people right on the top of the farm, and people got to, at Tanaka, what's cool is you drive in the wagon through the whole farm and you see everything growing. Not everything Glenn does is organic, but he gardens, he farms with intention in the best way possible. There are some things
they because they do have good strawberries.
They have great strawberries, and he grows them vertically, which is really interesting instead of in the ground.
He grows them vertically?
Yeah.
We had somebody come and talk about this idea of farming in urban areas.
Yeah.
And going up instead of going out, so you don't need as much space.
And there's hydroponic farmers in Huntington Beach.
Yeah, you can control the hydration.
Exactly,
better.
That's what they said,
And the pests.
And the pests.
The pests that are on the ground, right?
Yeah.
But so, yeah, Tanaka Farms is wonderful. And South Coast Farms is wonderful. They're out on Ortega Highway now. And
I was going to say, are there others doing this? Because
yes.
I don't want to slam the Sagerstroms. They've done great things in the county here. But they were one time lima bean farmers? Am I right about
that? Still grow some.
Do they still grow?
They still do. And actually, Jennifer and Anton Segerstrom are huge benefactors of the Ecology Center.
Okay, so there you go.
And wonderful
every,
people.
Dinner events at the Ecology Center, they're right there.
They're always there.
Yes.
They're coming to Friendsgiving on the 22nd. I'm excited to
so
see them again.
So we come from this agricultural background that quickly got plowed under or turned into development to shopping centers and malls and subdivisions and whatnot here. And that's the face of Orange County today, which is the kind of suburban neighborhoods I grew up in the Midwest, where we were removed from the food. We were removed from the soil. There was no soil. We didn't see the soil or the farmers or knew where it came from. It just arrived somewhere, probably from some giant corporation that brought this to us. Not that means it's bad, but they're doing it in a way that's not there to enhance the flavor and quality, and they're doing it based on cost and mass production.
But things didn't change that much, but it's up to you. If you
clearly
really want to make the right choice, that you have possibilities. And now you have reasonable farming, and you can Google, find what's the best grown or organic farm, local farm.
If you choose to take the effort to go find it, what do you say to my son-in-law and my grandchildren and people like that say, why bother? It's so much easier. Just get Uber Eats to bring you fast food. And
be surprised.
Because they got a busy life, a busy day.
More and more of them are becoming vegan.
That's my wife, My wife's a vegan.
Don't get me started on that.
Good or bad, I don't know.
I have a different opinion on not eating wholly from what the planet offers.
But I think part of it was just a resistance to chemicals and to corporate farming and to all of that.
Most vegan food is farmed chemically.
Yeah. Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, and it's very highly processed. Yeah. And
I think they'd be shocked to hear that, most of them.
Not.
Part of it is, not to hurt animals. I get that.
Right. There is that huge segment also.
Yeah, but you're right, because there's a lot of soy and stuff like
tons
that.
Tons of soy,
It's not that great.
Yeah.
But really, the key is when you eat well, if you stay away from sugar.
Oh, sugar. And don't get me started.
Which feeds
sugar
cancer.
It is. Totally.
I'm glad you said that. We do a show on cancer with a survivor of pancreatic cancer. And she said, I can't prove it. But the first thing a doctor made me do is cut out sugar. She drank Dr. Pepper by the caseload.
Oh, mama.
And she's lived for 19 years with pancreatic cancer, 20 years. So a rare survivor of pancreatic cancer, only 14% survival
very
rate.
Small.
So she says, I can't prove that's a part of it, but that's what they made me do, and I'm still here. And she had a couple doctors come on, and different people, and say, there is no scientific proof it feeds it, but we generally think it does. It definitely helps. It causes inflammation. Inflammation causes cancer. It may actually be, cancer may actually feed off of sugar and grow bigger and better and whatnot. A lot of people look at it. And yet, look at everything we eat as filled with sugar.
Especially the processed food.
Absolutely.
Not what you cook at home.
There's a company called Primal Kitchen, which was started by Mark Sisson. And Primal Kitchen's goal has been to take sugar out of ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise. Just all the sauces that people use every day. They don't realize how much sugar, regular ketchup, like a Del Monte ketchup, is 70% sugar and corn syrup. If you have Primal Kitchen ketchup, which still tastes absolutely delicious, there's no sugar in it whatsoever. But because of the quality of the food, the way it's made, you don't miss the sugar. So there's so many ways now to overcome the sugar habit, which of course is more addictive than heroin.
Yeah.
And
I'm addicted to it. I love sugar. Yeah. I'll eat cookies all day long if you let me. Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to let you start from here on out. But like, for instance, in the Max Love Cookbook, we have sweets in there. None of them are made with sugar.
Oh,
they're made
on.
With maple syrup. They're made with agave. They're made with dates. Because the body metabolizes these natural sugars differently than mm-hmm. processed sugar.
White processed sugar.
There's ways to still eat sweet and have sweet in your life, but you don't have to eat, you know, what a Coke has, 12 tablespoons of sugar
yeah.
in it,
yeah.
something
yeah.
like that.
Even if you buy fresh pressed juice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Look, it has added sugar.
Yeah,
they
I
do.
Know.
And they're so-called natural flavors
yeah,
that
yeah.
no one knows where they come
yeah,
from.
Yeah, they're unnatural ingredients.
More and more people are reading labels. More and more people are educated. What I find absolutely, it fills me with joy, is the young people that are turning to homesteading
yeah,
and growing
where did
their own.
Where did this come from?
It's
back to the soil movements of the 60s kind
is,
of thing. Yeah.
But it's so refreshing to see that and have them going, wait a second, like sourdough. Who isn't making sourdough nowadays?
You had somebody on the show the other day who make it talking about
right,
sourdough.
Right, but the fermented sourdough breaks down in the gut so much better than any other type of commercial bread. And so you can have your bread and love it, right? And have your slices of bread and stuff. People, oh, bread is evil. Bread is not evil.
No.
Not if it's made the right way and if you eat it in moderation.
Yeah.
So it's all about education. Educate yourself. And
at my house, we've tried to ban bread because it just seems like it's bad. Now, I will defend that a little bit because to me, bread was Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
It
right.
was wonderful.
Yeah, but a good sourdough bread and some good olive oil, that's all you need.
Oh.
Don't mix with cheese. Cheese
I need
doesn't
white
need
processed
bread,
bread yeah. with something fake on it like Kraft cheese. That's what I loved.
Yeah.
Fake bread and fake food. I know. This is what I grew up on. I ate my whole life.
You can change that. Everybody can change that. They can. And I, you know what? It's funny. My whole thing has been, I say one plate at a time. Because people try to massively, they go on a diet and they cut everything out of their
yeah,
body. You're
right.
just like, that's never going to work. One plate at a time. One thing at a time. What's something in your life that you want to change? Hey, we're coming up on New Year's, right? Resolutions. Let's think of one thing you can change for.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Don't change your whole life. Just change
Mm-mm.
one thing.
Change one thing. If you're
easier.
If you're drinking six Cokes a day, have one over ice. Make it last longer. I don't know. I'm not saying don't eat the things you enjoy. But if you can incorporate some of the other things that could give you, I believe, a higher quality of life.
Mm-hmm. So, now that we're talking about that,
mm-hmm.
how can we try your food?
You can't. It's only for the very rarefied few.
No, because I teach a lot of free classes.
Okay.
I teach a lot of classes at the Ecology Center. When Families for the Max Love Project, I do all of that for free. Everything I do with the Max Love Project. And there's six other chefs with me donating their time. Chef Andrew mm-hmm. Johnson, who is the head of culinary at Annalise Schools. Andrew's been part of the Fierce Foods kitchen for a long time. Chef Kobe Laird, who actually is a contractor, but
Fierce
has
food,
become
you
a chef.
You rattle off all these things like we all know what these are.
So the Fierce Food curriculum is what the cookbook is. And we have Fierce Food classes for our children and our families that we offer for free through Max Love.
And what does that mean, Fierce Food?
We teach them Fierce Food is how to feel fierce after you eat well, how to get energy from eating well, and we teach
but
those classes
have to
at Tanaka.
Meal or to take a nap.
So it depends, right? It depends. They say in Italy we walk after
yeah,
eating, right?
We do. Yeah.
That's better for the digestion. But Fierce Foods Academy is where we teach people this, and it's all free through our program. So if you want to support Max Love, that helps.
Give us,
us
some websites. You got a whole bunch. Let's start with your website. How do they learn about you? Where do they learn about the work you do or the classes you teach or whatever? Is there a place they can go?
My
to
Instagram.
Connect with you? All right.
At Chef Kathy. I do not have a website.
Is it Kathy with a C or
Kathy
a K?
With a C.
Okay.
Chef Kathy McKnight, McKnight.
So that's where they can find you. And then some of these groups that you volunteer with or work with or
yes.
support, community, like the Max Love.
Max Love is maxloveproject.org.
That's for
and
children with
that's
pancreatic cancer.
For children
cancer.
With, well,
I'm
with
not rare
cancers.
Rare
most
cancer.
Of them are
right.
brain cancer. Glioblastomas and things
that
like that.
That was one. What was the other in the Ecology Center? How do
the
we reach
that? Ecologycenter.org. They have a phenomenal website. All their community events are on it. It's like free to join if you want to, or you can join for $50. They have CSA boxes, community-supported agriculture, which I'll be teaching those classes in the new pavilion starting in 2026.
Really? Wow. In pavilions, the big fancy
No, pavilion? Their new pavilion at the Ecology Center.
Oh, their pavilion.
They built it in the middle of the farm.
Ah.
And there's a beautiful kitchen in it.
I want to be part of that.
You are going to be part of it,
yes.
Where I'm inviting all the chefs to come down, and we'll probably be streaming it live and
wonderful.
Doing, and it's all free. That's the thing. It's yeah. out there. Look, Chef, what you do at Saddleback, I know it's yeah. not the children are paying to go to school there, but they're learning so much more than how to put a dish together.
Yeah. They really are.
And I'm sorry, I'm real proud of myself for
you
doing
be.
That because it's I'm driven to go and share my knowledge. And they're just blown away.
I know.
Because they have a chance to work with
a very famous chef. The children, we have three children with the Max Love that are survivors that are at OSHA, which is the Orange County School
yeah,
of the Arts.
Sure, very good school.
And they're in the culinary program there. And Anaya was on your show earlier.
That was a girl. Not on Chef Show, on one of our other shows.
Yeah, one of your other shows. And her mom, Amanda.
Yeah.
And
they were phenomenal. Listen, it was a show called Doing Good Together.
Yes.
Where they bring in people who they think are doing good together with the community. I'd never heard of the Max Love Project. Now we've talked about it twice.
But
I guess I should pay attention and see what's happening.
Well, what's crazy about that is Anaya, she goes by Jordan now. Jordan and her sister started their own nonprofit spinning off of Max Love called the Pinky Promise.
That was it. Yeah, she told me that.
Yes. And they put together a toy drive every year for children with cancer at Chalk. So you can donate toys for that. That's at the Pinky Promise on Instagram.
And tell her the story. When I hear a kid change a name, we all roll our eyes and say, okay, they're going to change the name. But she changed it for a very powerful reason.
I was told she would rather be called Jordan because the association with Anaya was while she was going through treatment and people treating her still like someone with cancer.
Which was her whole life.
She's her whole life.
Like when she's three or four, she's Anaya with cancer. Mm-hmm. Two go together. Mm-hmm. So maybe if I change the name, I can change the narrative.
Now she's Chef Jordan.
Yeah.
And
good.
She's wonderful. And these kids in the kitchen that want to learn, God, I love it.
Kids who get, unfortunately, get cancer or the sickness, do you think there's more hope of recovery now because of hospital like Chalk?
I think yoking traditional medicine with all the breakthroughs going through with culinary medicine is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when you yoke those two together, you get astounding results.
We do shows on traditional medicines like Chinese acupuncture or Indian Ayurvedic and other theories. Are you talking about like stuff like that?
No, that's non-traditional.
No, yeah.
Traditional medicine is what Chef went through.
You can do a little bit of both if you want, but it's...
The woman who survived cancer, she said, I would have never done it, but she does yoga now.
Acupuncture is more physical feeling. It's like a good massage. You know? But no, I believe it's all a discovery that fantastic researchers in medicine are using.
And people are putting together their own journeys, as they say now. They're combining food with alternatives, with traditional medicine, with all this stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
finding their own combination, cocktail.
You can do it on your own, too. Mm-hmm. Like we just talked about, the whole show about eating, living better.
And movement.
Yeah.
I practice Ashtanga yoga. It's a six-day-a-week yoga
there
practice, which is very vigorous. Headstands and handstands and all kinds of inversions. And
can you do something?
No, I can.
But I don't know if they'll see me if I'm upside down. But my husband practices with me.
Look at that.
And I believe yoking, that type of movement where you keep your spine fluid going and you stay mobile with good food and good company and joy. If you sit around watching Fox News all day, I'm sorry, you're not going to walk around with
or
a lot of joy.
Or playing video games.
You're not going to have a lot of joy. But we get kids out in the garden. They get their hands in the dirt. They pull a fresh carrot out of the soil. They make salsa with tomatoes.
Exactly.
They,
you, for me... Be positive and stay and watch positiveness.
Yes.
If you watch negativeness, bad news, you know, it's...
It goes back to the non-Western traditions of energy. If you're filling your body with negative energy, they think that harms you. Yeah.
So you're absolutely right.
I'm not going to go in more in detail of your family, but you had kids.
Yes.
And they... Listening to you?
They reject all this.
You know, I'm not sure. My son...
Hot dogs and hamburgers.
No, my son actually played in the NFL. So
he did.
He was the only one ever out of Tesoro High School that was drafted into the NFL.
Really?
He played for the University of Colorado, was their all-time leading receiver.
What team did he play for?
He played for the Jets.
Forgive him for that. But
he did, but I know a lot of people, they can make Jet jokes. But Scotty saw a huge change when he was eating the right way, and that was something that was really big in our household. My daughter is a phenomenal cook. She feeds my two grandsons
beautifully. So you want to make
beautifully.
And you get the red?
Pardon me?
Once we get to it?
Yeah. Yeah. And he and
we have had some NFL players in here and Major League Baseball players. Mm-hmm. Orange County is known for producing a high crop of big, successful, huge baseball players and football players who could rattle them all off.
Yep.
From Bryce, whatever his name, the guy played for Modern Day that was the
Bryce Young. My husband coached at Modern Day.
You did. Okay.
He actually was the head coach at Jay Sarah, also the head football coach.
All Jay Sarah, we could exchange stories, and you'd know half the people have come in here. But one of the things
we're a big football family.
There's a lot of things going on in San Juan Capistrano.
Oh, a lot. But the thing is, it all comes down to going back to my daughter. My son has two children and one on the way. His wife, Taylor, is a wellness influencer, and she feeds those children beautifully. She's my girl wellness. And
let's end on that because what you say at the end of this thing you handed me with your 27 pages of resume or something here.
Oh, dear.
Like chefs here. Is your quest at the end that I see all these NFL players doing, Major League Baseball players and everything, they don't live by the standard American diet anymore. They exercise better. They eat better. They're more conscious of what they do and their outlook and their positive thing. All this stuff goes to making them
the
superlative.
Professional cyclists, they have...
You got to talk in the mic again.
The professional cyclists.
Cyclists, yeah.
They have... I would say that. They have people that help them nutritionally.
Oh, travel with them all the time, cook for them, train them and mm-hmm. everything.
And because the Tour de France, you do 250 miles. Day, you need to know you have the energy to do it.
Same thing with these NFL players.
One of my guys had a torn ACL when he came to me, and he had just been drafted into the NFL.
Usually a career-ending kind of thing.
Usually, and he's a first-round draft pick, and I started him on bone broth protocol, and he fought me tooth and nail. He was like a six-day-a-Coke guy, six-can of Coke. He was from the South, and sweet tea, and I said, okay, we're cutting all that out and we're starting you on bone broth. And he's, chef, I will not drink that. And I said, no, you will, and you'll thank me in about 6 weeks. And sure enough, his surgeon was so surprised by his recovery and what he's doing, and he's still playing now 5 years later in the NFL, and he's very high level quarterback, but he still drinks bone broth every day now.
Could you just think of you?
Yeah, I hope so. I think of him when I see him out there playing and he's still doing it. And I'm like, right on, dude. You're still drinking the bone broth.
I wonder how they get turned on this, because they all come up in the same culture we do. Many kids grew up poor, maybe in an inner city or rural area. This is their way out. Some of them grow up in affluent Orange County, and they're just trained from the time they're two, and they excel and do it. Wherever they come from, they don't necessarily come with anything other than a standard American diet. And they may not understand... if you want to reach a certain level and maintain it and sustain it, you got to change what you eat.
Some of them are lucky to be raised by a mother.
Of course, yeah.
I'll tell you.
Not that other people don't care, but you care.
I care.
Deeply.
Yeah, I care deeply. And one of the things I see in Orange County that is alarming to me is what we call redlining. And it's these young athletes that are doing way too many sports and they're training way too hard and they're injuring their ACLs and whatever other joint is trying to grow and it's being overused. And my grandson Jack goes to a school called the Togethership, which is
a
school for athletes in South Orange County.
Never heard of it.
Chef Patty Glennon and myself have been teaching nutrition seminars there for the kids and introducing bison from Tangent Draw Ranch in Montana.
Nobody
showing them
bison.
They
do. Buffalo.
And we did a riff on In-N-Out Burgers where we used Primal Kitchen's In-N-Out sauce with no sugar, and they had bison burgers, and they were like, oh my gosh. And so now all their moms are ordering shipping it to their doors from Tangent Draw.
But we are, not to go down another rabbit hole, we are burning these kids up. My daughter went through high school at Tesoro basketball.
Yep.
And they didn't want him to do anything but play basketball 24/7, 12 months a year. And it's like, some people said, you got to have some different athletics. You got to let different parts of your body grow. You can't just keep using the same muscle over and over and over again without blowing it out, burning it out.
So that brings to my next comment. If you really want to eat well, you don't always find it in the supermarket, even the high-end one. Go online. Yep. Go look.
Go online.
Something.
Yeah.
Reasonable.
But you got to get off the couch and go look. And so many.
Oh no! Right from your phone, man. You can DM me on my Instagram, and I'll tell you every farm that there is.
You go. That's what we need because we're a lazy society here. Just haven't brought to me here.
You know, at home now we eat only wild fish that come from an Alaska company. I eat meat from I think some Idaho. It's a little ranch there.
And so, I wish you would bring more of these purveyors in and talk about all of you guys together.
You don't. Could you buy online?
But there are other sources that must be locally that we could be supporting, and I don't even know they exist.
I have a really good one for you.
Okay. Last one.
I have a lobster guy.
A lobster guy in Orange County?
That Chef Patty introduced me to, and his name is Josh, and he's Laguna Lobster Company on Instagram. And you can go down to the harbor and get fresh, spiny lobsters when they're in season, right out of the water, and stone crabs.
Right,
they're in season right now.
Yeah.
They came in season October 1st.
It's like October, November, I thought. Yeah,
and I got 2 5-pound spiny lobsters last weekend.
Wow. But there's no claws on the ones.
There's no claws, but there's so much meat in the body and the tail. And then I took all the shells and I made fish fumé. I made a fumé. Yeah. And I'm saving that for lobster bisque.
I don't even know what a fumé is.
It's the broth.
Yes, the broth.
Clarified fish
broth. But you use that only with the shell and the bone.
Yes.
But sometimes you end up, you can't tell they eat well. The meat sometimes is a little bit pinkish.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
They eat shrimp and plankton,
It's amazing. Those spiny lobsters and the stone crab are phenomenal. And they're right in Dana Point.
See, who knew that? I didn't know.
Laguna Lobster.
Laguna Lobster. All right, we're going to leave it with that. Lots of places.
How can we get
the cookbook?
Oh, the Fierce Foods Cookbook is at Amazon. And all of the money, every penny of it, goes towards the Fierce Food Programs with the Max Love Project. And of course, I'd love for you to visit us at the farm at the Ecology Center. And
we got to do that because I've heard too much about this now. I'm surprised I didn't know about it.
You have to. And Chef, we're going to do some stuff down there together in 2026 because Evan Marks has great vision. There is now a peace dome there for yoga classes.
A peace stone?
Peace dome.
Oh, peace.
It's a huge geometric dome where they're doing yoga classes and sound bath healing and all kinds of beautiful meditations and energy work. And it's just crazy. On the dinner that I'm doing on the 22nd, which is already sold out, so I probably shouldn't talk about it, but it's Friendsgiving. And we have winemakers from Paso Robles coming down to join us for dinner from their organic wine vineyards.
They do dry farming, too.
Yeah, they're doing dry farming, regenerative farming.
I don't even know what all that is, and I'm not even going to ask you more.
It's part of the slow food movement that we talked about at the beginning. It's an offshoot. And just so you know, we cook everything there over open fire.
Yeah.
And so we really get down to basics. Everything is off the farm over open fire. So it's
no
it's,
microwaves or induction cooking.
You know what? I'm going to put a microwave over your head if you bring that up again. No.
But Chef's saying that now they have induction cooking at the
school. That's cool, right?
And they have to learn how to use a commercial
kitchen.
That's
when we moved with the time.
Yeah. Right.
But we did one special dinner one time, and we begged the Ecology Center to have a 2 burner stove.
You begged them just to get a little burner stove.
We just need one Bunsen burner.
Please.
But when I do the turkey stock for the gravy, it's a huge stock pot, and everything that goes in, all the scraps from the vegetables that go into all the courses and into making the stuffing, that goes in the stock pot. And that simmers the whole time till I get ready to make the stuffing in the gravy.
Over live flame?
Over live flame.
Oh, this is great. Another world. It's another era.
You got to come see it and join a community dinner because if you haven't done it, it's a once in a lifetime.
If we were native, they had no choice.
No, it's our indigenous culture is San Juan Capistrano. Yeah. The indigenous Indians, they are growing corn on the property. Mm-hmm. At the Ecology Center that was grown in California for hundreds of years.
Come on, I can't believe it.
And they grind it.
You're overwhelming me.
And they grind it, and we make polenta from it, and we make our cornbreads made from that, and our tortillas.
How do they get you? One last time, and then we're going to go.
You can reach me at Chef Kathy with a C on Instagram. That's the best way to reach me, by direct message.
Let's do it. Chef, take us out. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chef, for having me today.
Wow, a lot to swallow there, as they say, but worth the effort. A lot of tasty tidbits as we talk about what happens behind the kitchen doors. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.